So now we'll introduce our main speaker. I met this guy a while back at a men's retreat. And I've always heard that you tell how you tell someone's program, you know, by how they live. But there's also something I found that some people just have a spirit about them, and they have, you know, that they carry themselves with like the grace that this program comes with. And I knew that just from spending the weekend with this guy and surrounded by good guys up there. So it's my honor to introduce Eric C. Hi everybody, my name is Eric. I'm an addict. It's warm in here. A little bit. I want to touch it. Okay. I'm humbled to be here with you. This is a humbling experience for me. It used to be an ego inflating experience for me. I can remember being newcomers. Doesn't feel like it was that long ago. And I can remember thinking, can't wait till I get out there. I got some things to say. And I think the first couple times I did get up here, I felt the same way. But I was always nervous. And I'm still very, very nervous. I've done this a lot. I've done it in a lot of different places. And it's no longer an ego inflating experience for me. It's an ego deflating experience for me. Because I take it very seriously. I take it very, very seriously. Anytime I'm asked to be a representative of Narcotics Anonymous, it's life and death for me. We don't all make it. There's a lot of empty chairs out there. And I think about the people who maybe used to fill them, or could fill them, or should fill them. And it reminds me that we don't all make it. So, now that I've started off on that somber note, I'm not a camper. This is not my bag. This is not my cup of tea. I came up here a few years ago and did the campfire meeting on Friday night, and I was terrified. There were bugs and big feet, and I heard a lot of banjo music that may or may not have been real. And what I said then, I'll say again, is that you guys are hardcore, man. Like, this is hardcore Narcotics Anonymous. It's 98 fucking degrees up here, and you guys are sleeping in the grass in a vinyl tent. With more than one person, usually, right? That's hardcore. Newcomer, in case you weren't paying attention, there's over 900 years of experience in this room right here, right now. Oh, yeah. That may be a little intimidating. I know it was a little intimidating for me when Ron stood up. Ron's been clean longer than I've been alive. Not by much, Ron, but a little bit. And I thought, I got to get up and carry a message in front of such a group of my predecessors. I see Roberta out there. I see some other people out there that I really, really, I may have never had a conversation with you, but I've heard you. I've watched you. And I thank you for paving the way for a guy like me. I thank you for keeping the lights on. For a guy like me, Kevin and Tim. So newcomer, you're the most important person here. Old timer, I have respect and gratitude for you. And some timer, you're my peers, you're my people. And Alex mentioned about this little retreat thing that we do. It's just a handful of guys, and we've only done it a couple of times. But I gotta say that if you judge a man by the company that he keeps, then I'm a very wealthy man. I have some very, very good people in my life today. I have some very deep and meaningful friendships in my life today. And when I got here, I didn't have any of that. I didn't have anything. I was scared. I was somehow terrified and arrogant at the same time. And some people get that one. Okay, cool. And I didn't know anything about relationships. I didn't know anything about intimacy. And I really didn't know anything about love. And so I was about as lost as you can be. I was a grown man, but I didn't know anything about being a big boy. I didn't know anything about being a grown-up. And I wasn't always a big boy either. I was like 170 pounds when I got clean. So there is growth and recovery. And I joke about that, but I really shouldn't, because it's a struggle. It's part of my disease today. It's part of the way my disease manifests itself today. And it's funny because I find myself running to other things to escape. You know, I know that there's no escaping. I still try. I'm a duck and cover feeler, right? So if I can't duck it, I'm covering it with something. And I still do that as my first line of defense, even though I've been trained to do otherwise. So this is called finding our way. Or yeah, that definitely looks like a D, guys. And the t-shirts look like that too. I bought a t-shirt. Now I want my money back. No. So finding our way. I came in here lost. I was directionless, friendless, and most of all, I was hopeless. But something was going on here. There was something going on in the rooms that I walked into. I remember one of the very first meetings I went to, the dude was reading one of the readings in the beginning. I think it's Why Are We Here? Or what is the NA program? And he said, the newcomer is the most important person at any meeting. And he repeated himself. He said, the newcomer is the most important person at any meeting. And I said, that fucking guy's talking about me. Because, you know, I was completely self-centered. I didn't know what a newcomer was, but I thought I was probably that. I wasn't one of those. And I realized in that meeting that something was going on here. Something strange was happening. And I didn't trust it. I didn't trust any of you guys. You guys were smiling. You guys were bathed. You were forming complete sentences. You were communicating. You were showing. What you were doing is you were exchanging love, is what was happening. I didn't know that. But I knew something was going on. And I was scared of that, but also very attracted to that. And it took me a long time to surrender to what goes on here. My first clean date was in 1999, and my most recent clean date was in 2005. And I say my most recent because there's no guarantee that it will be the last. I hope so. I'm hopeful. I'm cautiously optimistic. But I don't take this for granted. And really, that whole idea of not taking it for granted was part of the reason I had so many clean days. Because when I first came around and I felt that love, I was like, wow, this is awesome and scary, and I don't want any parts of it. And then some series of events unfolded in my life, and I found myself back in the church basement, and the same thing happened, except this time I was willing to do a little bit more of what you guys told me to do. And then I got too freaked out, because, you know, being successful was terrifying for me. Like, and I bounced, man. Like when I would get clean, I bounced the first few times. And when I bounced, I mean, like, I bounced into the ABCs, you guys know, right? I bounced, I fell ass backwards into money and girls and stuff, and it just was not a workable situation for me. too much success too fast for me was not tenable. And when I become afraid, I use. And the last time I was using, I got scared because I got high with a bunch of people who had a lot of clean time and gave it up. And I was in this kitchen and people were using all around me, and there was close to 50 years of clean time at the table with me that had been forfeited. And I felt the overwhelming weight of despair in that room. I wasn't sure what happened that day either until doing some step work when I looked back. And what happened was I felt the weight and the burden of all that freedom that had been given up, of all that dignity, of all that self-respect, of all that love, of all that joy that those people had been able to accumulate in their life. Because I was just kicking in my little 9 months at the time. But these people had 10, 14, 17 years clean that I was partying with that day. And I became more terrified than I've ever been in my life. I thought, all this time I've been taken for granted that I can just go get a white key tag when it gets bad enough. Even though that's never what happened to me. There was no time in my life where I was using and I was like, you know what, I need to go to an NA meeting. It didn't happen. So the universe stepped in and some chain of events happened and I ended up back here instead of in a cage or in a coffin. That's what we are. We're the cage and coffin crowd. So if you're in here, realize you're very, very fortunate. You're very fortunate. It may not feel that way. You may feel like you want to hurt yourself and several other people. I'm here to tell you that's cool. You're right where you're good. Welcome to Narcotics Anonymous. But we are the cage and coffin crowd. And I was just fortunate, man. I really was. I didn't always feel that way. I don't always feel that way now. I'm going to try and tell you guys a little bit about what my life is like now without crying. It's not going to be easy. But before I do that, I want to talk about this idea of finding our way. So there's some things that I needed in order to be a traveler on this road of recovery. And, you know, even though I wasn't up here with you guys soaking up the energy of this place, I did some things to try and recharge my spirit before I came. I went to my old home group last night. It's called The Growing Tree, and they meet in Ambridge. And there's a lot of people there with a lot of time. And they raised me, man. I was in my home group the first 6 years I was clean, and those guys are all like father figures to me. They're all collectively like sponsors for me, and I carry those guys in my heart, and they jump into my mind sometimes when I don't want them to. You know, there's sometimes I'll hear Haggerty say some crazy shit in the middle of my brain, or I'll hear Dave D, and I'll be like, yeah, I probably shouldn't do that. You know, and I'm grateful that I was able to build the foundation that I was there. I'm grateful I was able to make the friends I was able to make there. I got a group of guys, man, that we've been around together pretty much since the beginning. One of us stumbled in here a little sooner than me. One of us came crawling in a little after me. And we've been friends for better or worse for over 10 years now, and we've attracted some new friends along the way. And it's been a really, really marvelous thing to be able to be a part of that. And so what the guys at the Growing Tree taught me was how to love. And I didn't know how to do that. And I still struggle with it. The first experience I had with intimacy was my sponsor. So I would not have been able to find my way in anything without having a sponsor. A sponsor, newcomers, is kind of like a tour guide. For lack of a better term. We'll call it tour guide so it's a little less intimidating than what really happens, but tour guide will work. And so my sponsor taught me about Narcotics Anonymous. He taught me about steps. He taught me about traditions. He gave me the secret to long-term recovery the first time I ever talked to him. He said, don't take anything. go to a meeting and call me tomorrow. And see, for years after that, I kept waiting for him to give me the secret formula, the secret handshake that you fuckers knew, right? And what I didn't realize is he gave it to me in like the first three sentences we ever shared with one another. And so having a sponsor is wildly important in order to get situated on the pathway of recovery. The meeting topic last night was recovery. And it was funny to listen, well, not funny, haha, but interesting to listen to how other people define that term. And you know, some people define it as getting back something, recovering something that was lost. And I don't look at it that way, because I've gotten far more from recovery than I ever had before I got here. And I'm not just up here trying to sell Narcotics Anonymous to you guys. Like, I jumped in a car and drove 2 hours and took my wife hostage and came up here because NA asked me to come and share. And even though I've been asked to do this pretty frequently lately, my friends tease me. They act like I'm sending audition tapes out and shit, which I'm not. I've never done that, but they give me a hard time, and it's cool because they're jagoffs, you know. But I love them, and part of me wants to be like, you know, no, I can't do it. It's nerve-wracking and it's intimidating, and but this is part of the 12 step for me, and if I want to stick around here, I got to work steps. So, another piece of finding my way is step work. You got to have a sponsor first. You can't work steps without a sponsor. It's funny because, you know, I hear at meetings and in the literature that the biggest thing that we need to be worried about is indifference or intolerance of spiritual principles. That's what'll send us out of here the fastest. And then I hear on the flip side of that things like, self-acceptance comes as a result of working the 12 steps. And our best defense against relapse is working the 12 steps. And yet, there's people who come to our meetings who don't work steps or aren't interested in working steps. That just baffles me. That, to me, that'd be like going to the crack house and playing cards. It just doesn't make a lot of sense. It's a weird place to hang out. So I work steps, and I work them a few times, and the thing about the steps is they always go deeper. They always go deeper. I barely scratched the surface. A friend of mine likes to use the term Forrest Gump. I Forrest Gumped my way through the first round and barely scratched the surface. And going through them again, I've been able to have a deeper understanding, a much more appreciative understanding of what it means to surrender, of what it means to hope, of what open-mindedness really is for me, of what willingness is, what courage is, what faith looks like. And I can tell you, man, I'm struggling with faith a little bit lately. I've been being attacked by fear. I'm coming up on an anniversary, and it's like not even like what I would consider to be a major anniversary, but it's another year that I didn't put anything in my body. And I used to hear people talk about getting a little weird around their anniversary dates. Look, you guys said some weird shit all the way through. When I first got here, you guys were like, my disease is talking to me. My disease is all over me. I was like, these people are schizophrenic. They're seeing shit, hearing shit. They've created this third person persona of the problem here. I'm very suspicious of you. Did trust you. So now I get it. Now I get it. I totally get it. And I know when I'm under attack. And I come under attack. Look, I don't know how much I buy into like spiritual warfare, right? But I do believe in the light side and the dark side of this thing. Okay? And I know that when I'm more in touch with the light side, when I'm working more on the light side of things, the dark side is paying much closer attention. I've heard somebody say once at the podium that if you ain't thinking about using, using's thinking about you. And that always resonated with me. Because sometimes I feel like when I'm working and I'm really making some breakthroughs with a sponsee, or when I'm making breakthroughs on my own program with a sponsor, or when I'm asked to do this kind of thing and little chunks like we do, it seems like we can go forever without speaking. All of a sudden, it's like boom, 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 you know? And it's like I feel, and maybe I'm crazy. Maybe I'm the schizophrenic one. Which, by the way, if you're schizophrenic, it's totally cool. I'm not trying to, you know, I'm not disparaging our schizophrenic folks. But I feel like I come under attack. You know what I'm saying? I feel like sometimes I come under attack. And sometimes I think I'm crazy. Sometimes I'm thinking, it's like, dude, who's attacking you? You're the only one here. And maybe it is just me. Maybe it's just my defects. Because the fear of that sets them loose. And so by the time I get around to the sixth step and I'm looking at the defective behaviors and if things, look, did anybody read Just for Today today? Yeah. Smoldering death. That's some severe language. We live like a smoldering death wish is what it said. First sentence, right out of the box. Boom. Smoldering death wish. Good morning. It goes on to say things like, when we do things to hurt ourselves, we feel bad. When we're not good to ourselves, we feel bad. That seems pretty simple and straightforward, doesn't it? But I don't get it, man. I don't get it until I'm on the other end of a defective behavior and I'm so disgusted with myself. And I want to beat the shit out of myself. And I want to talk about what a hypocrite you are. How dare you go stand up in front of those people tomorrow after you just ate like a gluttonous pig today. That's a defect for me, man. You know? I'm still trying to medicate a feeling with something outside of myself. And we can call it what we want to call it. I'm going to call it using. And that might seem kind of severe. And don't get me wrong. Don't get me wrong. Newcomer. Let me clarify something right now. If it comes down to having a Big Mac or smoking a 20-piece, have the Big Mac. Okay? But I am here to tell you that this disease is deeper than just drug use. And it continues to plague us well into recovery. It continues to plague me well into recovery. I got a beautiful wife, and I don't always like to bring her to hear me speak because she lives with me. Why are you laughing? Because I can get up here and I can say some things that might sound good. But she knows that I was a jack-off 3 days ago, and I might be a dick tomorrow. You know what I mean? And she keeps me real humble, and I love her for that. Sometimes I want to choke her for it. But I also love and respect her for it, because she has the courage to tell me when I'm out of pocket. And she's smart about it. She never says, like, why don't you call your sponsor? That'd be World War III. Right? Why don't you work a step? That's what I have you guys for. Right? The truth's a funny thing, man. See, the truth is like true north. We're trying to find our way here. The truth is true north. And here's the funny thing about staying clean over time. The disease changes. It manifests. It shapeshifts. 1 year it's this. Next year it's that. Sometimes things that we thought we had solved long ago come back to life in front of us, and we got to deal with that. But here's the thing about recovering addicts. They're no shrinking violets. They take life to the face. They live without an anesthetic. We don't have the benefit of blowing off steam at happy hour on Friday, folks. You know what I mean? This is big boy and big girl stuff. And it's possible. It's beautiful, and it's led to a life beyond my wildest dreams. But I'm here to tell you that it's not always easy. I don't want to paint this rosy picture like you're going to get clean and the rest of your life's going to be smooth sailing. We lose people. Bad shit happens. We get fired. We break up. We get divorced. We cheat on one another. We rob people. People rob us. There's nobody in this room that was up for Citizen of the Year last year. I'm pretty sure. I'm pretty sure. Maybe I'm wrong. But this is the most beautiful and realest and truest thing I've ever come across in my life. It's funny because I used to run around, I used to chase it, right? I would always look for it. Wherever it was, I wanted to be. And if I was at this bar, it wasn't here, it was over at this other bar, and I had to get there. And if I had this dope, it wasn't it, I had to go get this dope, because that was it, that was where it was going on. And I never found it. And I went all over the country, and I did all kind of goofy stuff, and I tried all different kinds of chemicals and chemical combinations to manufacture this thing that I wanted, that I couldn't describe, I couldn't articulate, I could just kind of point at. And it wasn't until I got to Narcotics Anonymous and started working steps that I realized all I really wanted was to be comfortable in my own skin. And I never found that in a chemical. I never found that in a relationship with a member of the opposite sex. I never found that in a job. I never found that in a title. I never found that in amount of money. But I found it here. And I found it by working steps. So I'm not going to go through my experience with the steps other than to say that it's critical. It's critical to the change process that needs to take place for a guy like me not to end up on the wrong side of a needle, a crack pipe, a bottle, a bag, a badge, a gun, a cell door, or a stone slab. And if you haven't worked the steps, I certainly encourage you to consider doing that. The other thing I wanted to talk a little bit about, I was listening. The other thing I did besides go to my home group is I got out in the woods this morning. I thought, yes, I really do want that walking stick, by the way. I was thinking about that this morning. Anyway, I was in the woods and I was hiking and I was sweating and I was listening to my headphones and I was trying to really get centered, and I was listening to another speaker, one of my favorite speakers, and he was talking about the difference between a journey and a trip. Some of you know who I'm talking about just by saying that, probably. But what he was saying was, and it ties into a conversation I was having with a friend of mine. A friend of mine just celebrated 10 years yesterday. And I got to witness a cathartic moment that happened in his life. He came into my home group 10 years and a day ago, and he had that breakdown. He had that meltdown where he was just asking for help. And it was such I identified so much with it. It still resonates with me when I think about it. You know, we were talking last night and then again a little bit today about how things change over time and how our relationships and our friendships change and grow and evolve. And we were also talking about, in some way, shape, or form, expectations. Like he said, when I got a year clean, part of me thought that I would just be like super recovery man or something. Or at least it would be some kind of next level shit going on. And I remember kind of feeling that way, and what it really was another day I had to get clean. I mean, it was a marker. It was a milestone, but it was also another day that I had to get clean. And the same thing kind of happens with anniversaries, 5 years, 10 years, 20 years. I would imagine. I don't know, but. That's the difference between a trip and a journey. A trip has a finite end date. I'm leaving here, I'm going to Harrisburg. I'm leaving here, I'm going to Ocean City. When I get to Harrisburg, Ocean City, 10 years, I expect to feel this way, or I expect to have this, or I expect to not have that.
And so he said, like, you know, when you're expecting things, you're tripping. And I thought, that's a pretty cool way to remember that. The difference between a trip and a journey is that a journey is open-ended. It doesn't necessarily have a predefined destination. And the thing that's most important during a journey is hope. Hope that things will get better. Hope that things will change. Hope that I'll continue to grow and evolve and self-actualize and become a better human being. Listen, when I got here, I didn't know what I wanted. I didn't know who I was. I was as lost as you can be. When I got here, I identified with the chemicals that I used. People called me labels that are associated with the chemicals that I used, and I was comfortable with that. People also called me other labels that identified with the behaviors that I performed in order to procure the chemicals that I used. Are you with me? The thing about it is, I am not those labels. Because if I was those labels, I would just continue to perform those behaviors. And those behaviors are no longer acceptable to me. They no longer sit well with me. When I do bad, I feel bad. Right? So if I were just those behaviors and those labels, the pain that's necessary for me to have gotten clean, the desperation that I believe we all need in order to get clean, would have never materialized in my life. And so who I thought I was when I walked in the door, my identity was shattered pretty quickly. And I'm still in the process of piecing together who I am today. And I don't know that that'll ever be a finished product, because I still got a lot of work to do. There's still a lot of things in my life that I wish were different about myself. There's still a lot of spiritual surgery I would like to sign up for. You know what I mean? There's still a lot of parts of me that I would be better off without. And I don't know that I'll ever be free of some of this stuff. But I know this. I know that when I got here, I didn't want what you had, because I had no idea what you had. I just knew I didn't want what I had. And today I know a little bit about what I want. What I want is to be a stand-up guy. What I want is to be a good dude. What I want is to be a good friend. What I want is to be able to take the ability to receive love that I learned in places like the growing tree. And I want to be able to translate that ability into the ability to give love. I want to be compassionate. I want to be intimate. And I don't mean the same way I wanted to be intimate when I got here. When I got here, I was all about trying to be intimate, or what I thought was intimate, and I was wrong. That's not intimacy. And I struggle with that. And I'm surrounded by beautiful people in my life. Chrissy jokes me all the time. She says, at some point you must have said, like, I want to be surrounded by beautiful women. Because I am. I got four generations of Kavanaughs in my life. I got my mother-in-law that lives with us. God bless her soul. I work her over. She irons my shirts. I'm trying to get her to make me some cookies. Shamelessly. Shamelessly. Trying to manipulate that woman into feeding me. I got my wife over here, who's gorgeous. I definitely hit the wife lottery. And I say that when she's not here, sometimes. I got a beautiful daughter. She's 24 years old. She's going to be 24 on Halloween. And we fought like dogs and cats when I first came into her life. I came into her life when she was 16. She doesn't let me use that step word. She gets her feelings hurt if I call her my stepdaughter. That's what Narcotics Anonymous does. So we fought because we were basically like two teenagers living under the same roof. And then she decided to go off a birth control pill, and I lost my mind. I'm not used to daddy. Fathering is not my, I don't have very much experience with that at all. And, you know, sure enough, she got pregnant, and I lost my mind. My wife called to tell me I hung up on her. I can be a jerk. See, I told you this was going to happen. Ah, what the fuck, click. My granddaughter was born on my birthday. 20 months ago. And she's the love of my life, guys. Like, when I look at that little girl, I just melt. I just melt. I know I'm fucked, you know. I know it. I know it. Because I'm like this hard ass. I'm like, nah, we're not spending money on that. That's stupid. Blah, 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 blah. And I know there's going to come a time where she's just like, pap. And I'm going to be like, fuck. Whatever. Whatever. Just take it. She already calls me pap. I'm pap. I'm fucking pap. Pap, pap. To be accurate, I'm pap, pap. And sometimes she whispers it. She'll be like, I'm so fucked. But my life is that good. I work in a field where I'm up to my eyeballs in this disease. And I'm comfortable there. Most days. But I got skin in the game. I said a few years ago that I wanted to do something meaningful with my life. I was tired of working jobs where it just... there was nothing in it for me, like, you know. And again, a series of events unfolded. I had people help me. I had people help me make hard decisions. Like, I could go work this job where I would make more money, or I could take it on the chin for less money and be in a position where I could maybe do something different with my life. And they convinced me that that was the thing to do. And I listened. And today I have a job that's beyond my wildest dreams. I don't make a ton of money doing it, but that's okay. I love you, dude. One of my best friends just walked in. But what I do is spiritual work, as my friend who just walked in would tell you. Or what he told me when I first started doing it, and I was like, yeah, it's not true. And what I'll tell you today is it feels true. It feels like the light in the dark. Light and dark. See, and here we're the light side, man. We're the light side, and we got to do battle with the dark side. The dark side lives in each and every one of us. And it's out there, out that door, down that street, back in the towns we come from, and some of the people we come across. And sometimes all we can do is be that beacon, be that light side. And that's what I want to be, man. I want to be the light side. I don't want to be no hero. I don't want to be like, you know, the president of Narcotics Anonymous. I don't. But I want to live a life that's meaningful today. And I'm surrounded by women in the work I do, too. Jeez. Literally. I've been humbled. I've been emasculated. I've been domesticated. I'm not the same guy I used to be, but I still got a lot of rough edges on me that need to come off. And I'm working on, you know what I'm really working on is just being me. Just being me. Like, figure out who Eric is and just do that shit on purpose. You know? Recovery taught me that. Recovery taught me how to be vulnerable. See, this work up here, this is being vulnerable. This is exposing myself in a way that's uncomfortable. But it's also very necessary. I believe in service. I believe in giving back. I haven't had a service commitment in like 2 months. And it doesn't feel right. It doesn't feel good. I gotta find some shit to do. I've served on a lot of different levels. The highest level of service is what I do at my home group. I try to get there early enough to at least hug a few people who are coming in the door. My home group's funny, man, because, like, you get there a quarter after. It starts at 7:30. My home group's principles first, by the way. If you're ever in the McKees Rocks, Robinson, Coriopolis area, come check us out. It's Wednesday nights. We meet at 7:30. And you get there a quarter after 7, there's 2 people in the room, and by 7:30, there's 45 people in the room. It's crazy. It's like everybody shows up at the same time. So I try to stand at the door and hug as many people as I can. That's the highest level of service. Because I know when I walk into my first few meetings, man, That was the most important thing to me. Somebody gave me a hug. In the beginning, I wasn't with it. Like I told you guys, I was like, don't know me, you know. And now it's like one of the greatest things to be able to welcome somebody to a Narcotics Anonymous meeting. So let's see. One of the other things I wanted to say was, like, over time, as we recover, as we grow and evolve and change and self-actualize in this process, sometimes the answers are different than they were in the beginning. But the basics are always the same. The basics are always the same. Sponsor, steps, service. We talked about true north being the truth. How I connect with the truth today is prayer and meditation. I got a little meditation chair. I put it in the front room of my house. It doesn't match the decor, so I know it ain't staying there. But I put it there for now. So I remember to use it. Because when I'm not praying and when I'm not meditating, I'm not hooking up with the source of this light side that I'm talking about. And that's true north for me today. Right? That's the thing inside me that always knew right from wrong. We always knew right from wrong. I believe that. I know I did. And if I didn't, then using and being the shitbag that I was wouldn't have been so painful. If I didn't know no better. But I did know better. And the thing that consistently keeps me in position in Narcotics Anonymous is that relationship with a higher power. I pray. I meditate. And when I do that regularly, my life is better. I was talking with a friend of mine about that the other day. I do that consistently. My life is better. And the last piece of the basis for me is meetings. The ultimate weapon against the disease of addiction is another recovering addict. When I go to meetings, I walk into rooms full of the ultimate weapons against the disease of addiction. And so I have to do that. I have to stay in contact with you guys. This is a contact sport. And I need to be with you. And sometimes I feel like I don't want to go. I don't have to go. I do this for a living, and I've been clean, and I've worked these steps, and blah, blah, blah. And I don't feel good, and there's something on the TV, and blah, blah, blah. And that's all horseshit. And it's all the disease trying to separate me from you guys. So I talked about the things I wanted to talk about tonight. I talked about love, which is what I really believe this is all about. I really believe this is all about love. But I don't want to leave here without hanging a face on the disease. Okay? And we talk about the disease of addiction, and I'm around a lot of people that got a lot of opinions about what that really is. I just read an article last week. Somebody thinks it's a learning disorder. I wanted to choke this broad. I wanted to fucking reach through the, you know what I mean? Learning disorder. Unbelievable. But I'll give you my spiel. My spiel is this. The disease of addiction is a parasite. And it's a parasite that feeds on misery. And people say that the disease wants them dead. And I no longer believe that. I believe the disease of addiction wants me miserable. Now, I'm most miserable when I'm using substances, when I'm using drugs. That's when I'm most miserable. But I can be miserable in recovery. My disease can still get fed long after I stop using drugs. Right? It can get fed by hurting people that I care about. It can get fed by continuing to behave in ways that I know are harmful to me. It can get fed by detaching from this program of Narcotics Anonymous, from detaching from a higher power, from detaching when I get indifferent to spiritual principles, which I do. Doug regularly has lunch with me. He will tell you I'm detached sometimes from a lot of stuff. And the people who are closest to me will tell you that I'm not like, what principle should we apply to this problem? It's not my go-to. I get there eventually, but it's not automatic. The disease of addiction is a parasite, and it feeds on our misery, it feeds on our suffering. And like any parasite, sometimes it occasionally kills the host. So my MO in dealing with my disease
in dealing with my periods of lack of faith and my periods of being victim to fear is I just try not to feed it. I just try not to feed it. Two things, really. I try not to feed it, and I always start again. I try not to feed it, and I always start again. Which means I'm going to fall short sometimes. I'm going to feed that fucker every once in a while. I'm going to throw it a bone every once in a while. But instead of jumping down in the hole and pulling the dirt in on top of me, I got to remember. Somebody said to me right before I came up here, remember, you get to do this. I get to do this today. I get to be clean. I get to have some say in whether or not I feed the disease of addiction. There was a period of time where I had no say. I would wake up in the morning for a decade plus and be like, maybe I won't get high today. And the disease would be like, that's cool. You make whatever plans you want to make, bro. We are getting fucked up today. And that's how my life looked. And today, I get to have some choice on whether or not I feed the disease of addiction. I think I'm about done, guys. I'm tired. I'm grateful. I love Narcotics Anonymous. I love the friends I've gathered together on this thin raft. We have constructed pyramids in honor of our escaping. Nobody knows Jim Morrison anymore? All right, I'm just going to close. I love you guys. Thanks.